This is the weekend edition of the Core Report.
Hello and welcome to the Core Report's weekend edition. India's trade deficit is now at about $19 billion. That was for the month of April. The issue, of course, is not trade deficit specifically, though it's been a little high. It keeps going up and down. The larger issue is, how is India doing when it comes to trade and merchandise trade specifically? What are the challenges that we're facing right now out as a result of some of the geopolitical shifts that are happening? Are there opportunities? Are there more challenges? And then, of course, what are the other kind of opportunities we are seeing in non-merchandise trade, which is really services, IT services, and so on? So it's not often that we look at all of this in a more composite way and where trade stands in the context of India's overall gross domestic product. And therefore, again, what are the opportunities and challenges? So I'm pleased to be joined today by Ajay Srivastava, founder of the Global Trade Research Initiative. Now, Ajay Srivastava used to work for the government. He was a trade service officer and an additional director general of foreign trade, and therefore brings with him many years of understanding and experience from that world. And he's also an MBA from the Indian School of Business, but he's more importantly in recent months and years been writing on how and what India should be doing in many areas which are critical to foreign trade, and also pointing out where some of the challenges are and why perhaps we're not growing as fast as we can in some of those areas. On that note, Mr. Srivastava, it's a pleasure to have you on our show today. So we're going to talk about India's merchandise trade and where things have been in the last few years and what's working for us and what's not. So let me pick up a specific point, which is the most recent, which is that India's goods trade deficit has widened in April to about $19 billion from about $15.6 billion in March. Now, this may be seasonal, you know, depending on which time of the year it may go up or down. So let me not go too deep into that. But if you can first walk us through where we stand in terms of merchandise trade at this point in both the global context and also in the context of what our capabilities are, then we can move on to the next question about more specific industries.
Good evening. Thanks, Govindji, for inviting me for this show. I agree with you. We should not focus too much on monthly or even yearly data, considering the disruptions in the global economy for the past 6-7 years, continuous disruptions, starting from COVID pandemic. In fact, we can go beyond that. But if I want to talk about the overall sense about the importance of foreign trade, and then I'll include both the merchandise and the services. You know, in FY24, that is the financial year ending in March this year, our trade reached $1.6 trillion. If we say our GDP is $3.8 trillion, then the foreign trade has exceeded 42% of GDP. This is a big number and shows that foreign trade is an important part of Indian economy. Now, coming to the merchandise trade, first we talk about the exports. Again, if we look at the yearly exports, then we say for this year, the exports were down by 3.1% compared to the last. But if we look at the five-year figure, and that's better for us, longer view because of the disruptions, then we have gained 32.1%. If you compare the data between FY19 to the present data. So 32.4% gain is a substantive gain. And 5 years is a better period. We have seen the COVID-19 pandemic, Russia-Ukraine war, rising interest rates in the US and EU, and disruption in the Red Sea shipping. And 2 days back, we have seen US is probably in the mood of starting trade war again with China when they are jacking up with the import duties on EVs and host of other products. And most of the duty increases will take shape in this year itself. So if I talk at the global level, then I say India is ranked 17th globally in terms of merchandise trade. We have a share of 1.8%.
So let me start with the top figure that you shared with us. You said about $1.7 trillion is our trade versus a GDP of $3.8 trillion. So can you break that $1.7 trillion further?
Exports of goods and services as a percentage of GDP this year is 20.4%. This is good or bad. Now we have to see who we are comparing to. If we talk about the smaller economies like Vietnam or Singapore, where the ratio of exports versus GDP exceeds 100, we are nowhere. But if we talk about the larger economies like USA, China, then we are in the range. So I'll quote some figures. For USA, the exports to GDP ratio is just 11%. For us, 20.4%. For China, exports to GDP ratio is 18%. For us, 20.4%. So all the large economy, exports is one of the components of the economy. When economy grows, exports grow in a very organic way. Smaller economies like Vietnam and Singapore, they have their advantages, but they are too much dependent on foreign trade and they suffer badly when the losses are there.
But you're saying that our current exports to GDP ratio is higher than China, at least the ratio.
Yes.
Now, let me come to the other point. You talked about trade as a whole. So, I mean, would you say that we don't therefore give as much importance to trade or to exports, given the fact that it contributes so much to GDP?
As we see, it's an important contributor to the economy. Because not only exports, imports also contribute to the economy. And share of total trade is 42%. It's a big, big, big chunk of an economy. Exports is 20.4%, but total trade is 42%. It's a big chunk of the economy. So it's an important part. So we have to compare with the comparables. We are a large economy. And so we have to compare with large economies only in trade to GDP ratio. We do compare well with China or the USA. And we should not compare with Vietnam or Bangladesh or Singapore. Not that we don't have anything good to pick up from them. Of course, we do have many lessons from them. But we need not compare.
Okay. So let's look at a couple of specific areas. Now, one is that I'm assuming the argument is that we need to export even more and step up our exports and work on areas where, let's say, for various reasons, we're at a competitive disadvantage. So let me pick toys. It's a very small sector, but it's an area that you've studied quite closely. Now, the global toy industry is worth about $60 billion, of which China constitutes, through exports, about $48 billion. India exports only about $167 million. And even the Czech Republic, which is a small country, exports about $3.2 billion of toys. So what does this tell us? I mean, this is not so much about toys, but what does this tell us about India's manufacturing competitiveness, India's ability to find a place in an industry like this where it could have, I'm assuming, if it had full or better controls over its factors of production?
So toys are of basically two categories. One is traditional toys and second is electronics and advanced manufacturing toys. We are almost nowhere in the second category. And world, that category has become very big in the past 20, 30 years. We have to realize this and we have to work on that. And we cannot have all the advances and machinery and engineering in the next few years. So we have to do what China did in the past 20 years. They invited most of the large toys MNCs into China. And with the JVs, with the Chinese firm, they're manufacturing there. We also have few JVs, but we don't see the results on ground. So if I have to say this, I have no shame in admitting that we have to do a lot in toys. So far, our efforts have been focused on containing imports, especially from China. And that was very much needed because China was supplying substandard toys. And many surveys in the market, they revealed that they are harmful for the children. So a quality control order or rising of the duties, those measures were taken. We thought while imports will come down, our exports will go up. Both are different ballgames. Imports have come down, of course, if you raise the duty and impose many quality parameters, they will come down and they have come down. But these measures will not automatically jack up the exports. That's a different ballgame. And we need a very clearly defined strategy to jack up exports.
Let's pick up another area, garments. Now, garments is something that India has obviously been traditionally strong in. And that's also an area where, let's say, countries like Bangladesh and even now Vietnam are overtaking or have overtaken us in quantum. Now, there could be tariff reasons for that. A country like Bangladesh will enjoy tariff advantages when it exports into the EU, for example. But if you were to take those tariff advantages away, what is it that, let's say, distinguishes us and why is it that in India has not been able to jack up or grow further in its exports, particularly in garments?
When I talk to garment exporters or I read the reports here and there, everybody in the industry, they say, okay, India should do an FTA with European Union because our garments, they pay 12% or 18% import tariffs, and garments from Bangladesh or Vietnam, they pay no tariffs. So the moment we do an FTA, our tariffs will be zero in European Union or the USA and our exports will increase. that's not going to work. We have to realize we are just delaying the decision making in this. We have to understand this very clearly. I'm very much convinced. How I'm basing on what things I'm basing my conviction is, I was negotiating the FTA with the Japan in 2009-10, and then industry came to the government and they said Japan is a developed country. Of course, they are developed country like EU or USA, and they, of course, because of the high wages, they cannot make apparels. They import all their apparels. India is very good in garments, apparels. So let's negotiate zero duties from day one on apparels with Japan. We do zero duty on apparels because they cannot export to us, and they also do. So we negotiated and Japan agreed, and tariffs were removed from day one on apparels and garments. But what happened? Now the agreement was signed in 2010-11. And you compare the data now, barely in increase there. It's worse than the average trade increase with Japan. So if you are selling to the developed country, it's a totally different mind game, ball game, whatever we say, we need to understand. Most people, when they talk about this duty thing, I think we are not thinking enough. So my thing is, as we see garment trade has changed the past four decades, now 70% of the garments, they are fast fashion garments or non-cotton garments. Our share, world share of these garments in our export basket is just 35% only. We have to change that. We are the best maker of yarn, cotton yarn. We can't convert yarn into quality fabric. So our yarn is exported and we import fabric for making garments. So we have to work on value chain integration. And if we can't work on that, we have to allow free imports like Bangladesh or Vietnam does. I mean, these are not easy policy solutions, but I think we need to talk about this. Right now, we don't talk about this. We say the moment we do an FTA, exports will increase. I believe we need to talk about 100 such points. And then there are things like labor laws, there are things about scale. Bangladesh, the average factory size is 10 times India. I have not visited any of the factories in Bangladesh, but I was reading somewhere. So we have to work on those things. We cannot delay decision making on these things.
India has entrepreneurs. All these countries have entrepreneurs. India has more of them, at least in proportion. So what stops entrepreneurs from going into areas like, let's say, toys or garments? And we could pick up a few more areas which are more export oriented. And what stops them or prevents them from going for scale or expanding what they already have to that level?
Less than 2% products in the market are very high tech, where you don't have access to technology. Rest, everything can be reverse engineered. When we can make generic molecules, we can reverse engineer everything in the country. We have to start thinking about those directions and start making not only toys, but the real machinery, real electronics and those things. We have to put our engineers at work. And I don't have answer. Maybe I would not like to discuss in this public forum about our entrepreneurs and those things. But the moment we discuss an issue in detail, say even a two-page good note, we'll talk about all the problems faced by entrepreneurs. When you sit with them, they will say, I spent 2% more here, that's why I go to Vietnam. I spent 3% extra here, that's why India is not feasible. We have to listen to them. We have to work out them. So what China did about 20 years back, say they wanted to do electronics. They didn't have any expertise in electronics. They almost imported everything. They allowed free imports and they welcomed imports. We have to start thinking deeply. Right now, I think our model of manufacturing is import, assemble, sell it or export it, whatever, in electronics. And in textiles, we are using the methods we used to have 30, 40 years back. I'm not talking about our high-end manufacturers, but most of the industry I'm talking about. And we have to understand, I want to tell you how manufacturing has changed. When you talk about entrepreneur, I'll tell you how we all have to understand new things. You know, when we talk about global value chains, we feel the electronics is complicated or precision engineering complicated. But look at how a simple shirt is made. 20 years back, we used to buy fabric, go to our tailor and get our shirt stitched. Now, no more. For high-end shirts, how they are being made. Say, H&M or Zara, they will decide that they buy yarn from India. And because India cannot convert its yarn into good quality fabric, they say yarn is to be exported to China. And China can make good quality fabric, but they cannot be the best dyer. So yarn from India will fly to China. China will convert into fabric, and China cannot dye it properly. So it will go to some African country, Lesotho or Spain, European country, for good quality dyeing. And since European countries, their labor costs are high, labor charges are high, they cannot stitch the fabric into garments. So the fabric, dyed fabric, will move to countries like Bangladesh or Vietnam or Ethiopia for final garments to be cut and made. So even a simple thing like shirt, same is the example of bicycle, chocolates. We are 10 countries involved in the simpler of the things. I think we are not ready. We don't understand these things, how the world has changed the past 20 years. And we still talk about the old things. We need to talk about these things, discuss these things in detail. And more than the policy instruments, how these things are to be enabled and we can help our entrepreneurs. So I think sufficient amount of discussion is not taking place. Not that somebody is stopping. I was myself in the government and I see how much time people invest, take pain, and they are all working together with the industry. But I think such detailed discussions, freehold discussions, more and more discussions, all the levels are very much necessary.
Right. This also in some ways brings me to my next point, because you've talked about, or rather you described when you talked about garments, a fairly intricate global supply chain. And you said that such intricate global supply chains are there in many more industries, including in chocolates. And chocolates is a good time to talk because cocoa prices shot up to record highs and then they've come back, because of which it's affecting farming patterns in Latin America and in Africa, of course. So the point that sort of that comes up next is obviously geopolitics, which is changing things, which is, let's say, affecting or reordering supply chains. Tariffs are going up. You referred to the America increasing tariffs on, let's say, most recently on steel, aluminum, electric cars by President Biden. Other countries, including India, are constantly increasing tariffs in the last decade. So how is this now changing trade and the elements of trade, and including export competitiveness or import competitiveness for countries like India?
You must have seen plenty of good papers on trade policy. In fact, I'm talking about myself also. I have seen plenty of good papers, discussions, and many expert views, Indian experts, global experts, talking about how free trade is good. And nobody was talking about the industrial policy. Because America in the 70s, in their wisdom, they decided that they don't want to manufacture in their backyard. Everything has to be shifted to China. And a whole of the country followed them. So right now, American policies with China, that tension with China, I don't want to talk about Russia-Ukraine war or the Red Sea disruptions or the Israel-Gaza war. But the defining fact is America-China war, and whatever any side says, I see the theme, the key theme is that America wants to take back what they have given to China. China was nowhere in the pre-90s. It was with the help of America, Europe, and Japan that they became the manufacturing powerhouse that they are today. And America feels enough is enough. COVID was a big rude shocker for everyone. And they realized they don't even produce the cough syrups for their children. Forget about the hospital supplies. They all 100% come from China. And even smaller things, they were coming from China. They had more than 50 firms manufacturing solar panels. They all shut down because of imports from China. But they were all happy to a great period of time. Of course, India did not matter in these things at all. But now America, after the COVID especially, they feel they have to rest it again. And then they thought, okay, China is doing manufacturing, but we are based in high-tech semiconductor AI. But all the indexes you see, all the technical papers you see, China is going much ahead in every field. They have bigger supercomputers. They are far ahead in AI. And the only thing America can boast a monopoly is on chips. But for the past one week, 3-4 days, we are reading that China can make even 5 nm chips. I don't know how far that is true. But China is catching up very fast. US wants to wrest the control. Difficult for US to wrest this control. But for wresting this control, US is shaking the supply chains. So you can shake the supply chains at the top level, which means your top suppliers, okay, it should not be from China. But the second layer of supply chain is again Chinese. Third layer is again Chinese. If you consider our pharma exports, we buy 70% of APIs from China. And if you want to make APIs, like PLI is trying to incentivize making of APIs, then the chemicals which make APIs, they also come from China. I mean, China has done wonderfully well, and we have all acted like fools. I think they beat us in IQ game, if nothing else. So I'm not a supporter of China. I don't like most of their policies, but this is what it is.
I think on APIs, you mentioned the 70%, and I looked at that recently as well. I mean, one of the components that we are importing, or raw material we're importing, is penicillin, which in turn is used for, let's say, amoxicillin and, you know, drugs for antibiotics, which are obviously very critical. And we were producing more basic chemicals at one time than China was. And somewhere they've overtaken and now, of course, crashed prices by almost a third compared to what it is globally. So we are just unable to counter that. But in this new, the sort of the shifting world of geopolitics, how do you, and explain to us, for example, you know, we've just done our deal with Iran, which has been going on for some time, set up a new port. Even as earlier, we've extended full support to Israel. Israel and Iran are now actively firing missiles against each other, or at least were a few weeks ago. And that was a new flashpoint compared to ever before. So how is India navigating this new world? Are there benefits for us? Are there concerns? How are you seeing it?
I think India is playing very safe. India is being transactional instead of being ideological. We don't say somebody is good for me, somebody is my friend, somebody is my foe. No, India is not doing that. India is getting cheap oil from Russia. India is buying it. India is getting a way to Afghanistan and Central Asia bypassing Pakistan. So India is going for this new port, our port. And same IMEC initiative. So India is being transactional. I think that's the best approach in this world. We should not be seen to be aligned with one set of the countries and opposing another set of countries. Whatever suits our country at this moment of time, we must take those actions. I think that's a perfect foreign policy. I totally agree with this broadly.
So if you were to look ahead, and this is one of my last questions, you know, how should be exporters or importers or business people be thinking about geopolitics in this day and age? I mean, I don't think geopolitics was so on top of people's minds even a few years ago. Maybe after COVID, things have changed. And how should that determine what we do and what we manufacture and what we aim for, even in our ambitions?
So these things are important. Geopolitical changes are important. But if you see, global trade is rising. That rate of rise has moderated in the past few years, but it's steadily rising. It's about $32-33 trillion, $24 trillion of goods and rest are services. It's steadily rising, and exports from India in the past 5 years is done by 40%, as we have seen. So normal things which are traded world over, people need it. And whatever America says about China, China will continue to be the factory of the world. You must have seen this 2 days back order of USA where they increased the tariffs on EVs and the components. They say no tariff increase on industrial products. So US is clear enough what they cannot make and they need to source from China. So in the next, I don't see much change at the ground level in the next 10 years, whatever we say. But it's a great opportunity for India because our trade levels just with 1.8% merchandise trade is too low. With some effort, we can double it. I don't see any problem with that.
So we've talked about merchandise trade all this while. You've also argued in some of your articles about how services should look beyond information technology. Tell us why and how that could play out.
So two things stand out. One is today, software service, software exports and IT services, they account for about 50% of India's trade. But about 70% of this export earnings come from USA, just one country. Suppose some problem happens in the USA, this will be a problem. So we need to diversify. And despite our efforts, we are not able to diversify. And if we talk about the USA, EU, and UK, they account for about 90% of our IT earnings. Just three regions or countries, if I say. Then IT sector, you know, because of this AI-driven disruptions and automation, its rate of growth will not be as high as it used to be. And our share in the global IT exports is already very high. It's 20%. But there's another star which is rising. I'm just studying about those things. It's other business services. You know, this engineering services, management consultancy. You know, IT requires a set of experts. So we have about 50 lakh people, of which about 20 lakh must be programmers or engineers working in this field. But this other business services, it's like engineering services, R&D services, and we have lakhs and lakhs of professionals working on that. MNCs, about 1,400 MNCs, they have opened their global capability centers all over the country. They contribute to about half the turnover of other business services from India. So if I summarize, IT turnover is $150 billion. It's about 50% of India's exports, current exports. Other business services, about $80 billion and 1/4 of India's exports. But the global share of other business services is 2.5 times the IT services. So rate of growth is higher for other business service. And I think if we take some smart decisions at the government level, the growth in other business services will surpass IT service and it will very pleasantly surprise us.
So what you're saying there is, therefore, we should, let's say, I mean, I'm sure there is a red carpet, but roll out the red carpet further for companies to, or global MNCs to either set up or expand their existing global capability centers in India or reach out to more countries and invite them over to come and set up shop.
That's part of the story. Global capability centers, they account for an estimated about half the exports in other business services. Rest half comes from Indian firms. You know, these BPOs and KPOs, many of them, they graduated to supply services under this head. So that area, compared to our exports are very less. We need to do a lot of work. So inviting MNC is fine. They will come because they don't face logistics or labor issues in this sector happily. So they will come and they are coming already. India is one of the largest centers for global capability centers. I am talking about how to engage our professionals, our CAs, our architects, our engineers who are capable, how to expose them to global practices, global markets. A lot of work needs to be done in that. And once that happens and that's within reach, if with some smart decisions, if we do some 3-4 things alone, I think the share of other business services will be very high.
And can you give us one example? So like, for example, I mean, doctors do work on, let's say, cross-border in the area of, let's say, AI imaging. I'm just taking some random examples. A lot of lawyers work cross-border again. I mean, they're not working as lawyers, but they're working on legal documentation, which is in some ways knowledge processes outsourcing. So is there something else that you're referring to, or is it, would it come under that ambit?
It will come under that only. Now, you must have seen that people stopped using the term BPOs and KPOs. We talk about upgraded terms like GCC and these things. So most of the BPO and KPO work must be subsumed under this other business service. That's my current level of understanding. I may change it if any flaw is there, but my current level of understanding is that they have been subsumed. They have to be subsumed under other business services. You are talking about the problems. So you talk about this doctor and imaging. Suppose a doctor over the internet is trying to give advice to a patient based in Spain. But the Spanish laws or the European laws, they say, no, you cannot do it on telephone or internet unless you have a physical presence. You should have a small office. Then you can do it from India. But you should have a small presence. These things are very real. So each country's regulation is very different and we have to wade through. So large firms can wade through, invest money to know those things. Smaller firms, independent groups cannot do. That's where government comes. Government should invest in large associations, subject-specific associations like engineering services, and at least 50 such services are there who are masters in their subjects, and they should be the first port of call for independent professionals or small firms. Okay, they will say there's an opportunity in Spain for this service. You can try for this. And then there should be a platform through which they can approach them. So right now, it's almost a black box. At least my knowledge is that GCCs are doing fine because they are run by MNCs, but rest, most of it is a black box. We need to shed light on this. So a lot of discussion need to happen on this aspect. That's what is my understanding today.
Mr. Srivastava, thank you so much for joining me.
Most welcome. Thank you very much. My pleasure.
That was The Core Report with me, Govindraj Ethiraj. Do stay connected with more of our coverage at The Core. You can check out our website or sign up to our newsletter for our exclusive stories, one in-depth feature a day on www.thecore.in. Do also track us on LinkedIn, where we usually post synopses or extracts of our top stories and interviews. We would love your feedback on how we can make business more interesting and relevant, including, of course, India's vibrant manufacturing sector. So write to us at feedback@thecore.in. And thank you once again for listening.